Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. This is 28th day of January 2026. We're ready for oral arguments in the first case, which is Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association versus Minnesota Board of Peace Officers Standards and Training. Appellant's counsel may approach the podium to begin argument. Please introduce yourself for the record before you begin.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Michael McSherry, Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training. Present with me today is Nick Platson, Assistant Attorney General, also representing the Board. Your Honors, I'm here today to ask this Court to apply binding precedent from the Supreme Court to hold that the Board's licensing data are not actually personnel data and to reverse and remand for the dismissal of respondents' claims with prejudice. Because this is a threshold dispositive issue, I plan to devote nearly all of my time on this issue before addressing the District Court's incorrect class action and standing decisions. Your Honors, the crux of plaintiff's theory of the case was fairly straightforward. They allege that the Board released the names and birth dates of undercover officers, and they claim that the release violated the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act because those data were classified as private personnel data. They're wrong on the law governing the definition of personnel data, and the Minnesota Supreme Court has said as much. Because each of plaintiff's claims turn on an inapplicable data classification, the claims fail as a matter of law. Your Honors, the framework of the DPA may be familiar to you, but generally all data are presumed to be public unless they are otherwise classified as not public pursuant to state law, federal law, or temporary classification.
Counsel, it seems that your argument hinges on the Supreme Court's decision in the KSTP case. Would you like to address that specifically, why you feel KSTP governs the result in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. So 1343 subdivision 5 is the relevant classification statute that the respondents rely on. That classifies personnel data about undercover officers as private. Subdivision 1 is the definition of what personnel data is. It's data maintained because an individual was an applicant for an employee of a government entity. The Supreme Court in KSTP was addressing ambiguity in that statute about what the clause maintained because actually meant. They were presented with two competing statutory interpretations. One, they deemed the multiple purpose reading. That was a reading in which basically if a government entity maintains data for any personnel-related purpose among any number of different purposes, 1343 would apply and render any relevant classification applicable to personnel data applicable to that data. That was not the prevailing interpretation that the Supreme Court adopted. Instead, they adopted a single-purpose reading. And essentially what the single-purpose reading says is that in order to be personnel data, the government entity that maintains the data has to maintain it for a single personnel-related purpose. So it can't just be one of many purposes. It has to be the singular and exclusive purpose for that data.
But let me ask you this. Who was maintaining the data before it got to post?
Well, and that can we just back up? Because this is a Rule 12, denial of a Rule 12 dismissal. This court accepted discretionary review. But the name, I mean, from the record, and let's try to stick to the record, names and dates of birth are submitted by the, I'm sorry, Judge Larkin, but I just want to get the facts down first. The names and dates of birth are transmitted to the post board in the preliminary application, right? So they get that data directly from the individuals, not from a governmental entity.
So it's not part of actually the initial application. It comes before the application. The post board has an examination process that an individual needs to go for pursuant to their rules before they can even apply for an actual license. So that would be the first point in time in which any individual who is seeking peace officer licensure actually submits their identifying information to the board. They need to become an individual who is eligible to be appointed as an officer.
Right, understood. And so then at that point in time, the post board has no knowledge of whether they're, I mean, they probably aren't even working, I suppose, at that point as a peace officer, so they're not working as an undercover officer, correct?
Correct. They would not be eligible to serve as a peace officer within the state.
And so then when does this data about undercover officer come into the possession of the post board? At what point in time? And it looks like from the interrogatory answers that the MPP, that respondent, put in the record at the district court, that that's when somebody is an active peace officer, right? And they can transmit it into the database somehow or another, into post system. Is that right?
And just to distinguish, Your Honor, on the Rule 12 record, we would be limited to plaintiff's pleadings, and they say that they submit these data in order to become licensed. That's part of their amended complaint. Within the interrogatory record and within the pleadings as well, they talk about the process through which a chief law enforcement officer of a law enforcement agency can make a designation to the post board asking that the post board treat the data as private.
And but is regardless, that how it comes into the possession of the post board then?
The data requesting that somebody be designated as undercover. And I want to parse between the data that is prepossessed by the post board versus data that was allegedly disclosed from an employer over to the post board. And I also want to clarify that they're not alleging that the post board disclosed any information revealing an undercover designation of an officer. They're saying that the post board disclaimed or disclosed names and dates of birth. Those data are already in post board's possession.
Regardless of whether, well, I guess that's a question for respondent, of whether it's regardless of whether the post board knows that they're undercover. I'll ask that of respondent. Never mind. Okay, thank you, and thanks, Judge Larkin. Go ahead.
Why don't you continue?
Well, and I'll just go into the reasoning of why the single purpose reading makes sense. The Supreme Court explained that it was to avoid conflicts between different provisions of the Data Practices Act and to ensure that government entities preserve the public presumption of data. They're not going to be using 1343 as a shield against the public presumption. Now, with the post board, what respondents are arguing is that 1343 applies, but they really don't address 1341, which is the governing statutory scheme applicable to all licensing agencies, but also applicable specifically to the post board.
So can you address 13.82 and respondents' argument in connection with 13.82? Because that does seem to include the post board.
My argument would be that Subdivision 17, which is the relevant provision that they're saying that goes back to 13.43, my argument would be twofold. First, the post board is not defined anywhere as a law enforcement agency. Subdivision 17 uses that term. Subdivision 1, which references the post board, is not exclusive there.
So can I ask you a quick question then? So it says that this section applies to the post board. So which sections of 13.82 would apply to the post board then? I know some of these appear to apply, like Subdivision 3, you know, applies to like a 911 agency, calls for public service. But so what sections of 13.82 would apply to the post board then?
It's unclear.
Or is 13.82 subdivision 1 just surplusage?
It would probably be surplusage, and I imagine somewhere in the statutory history there might be an answer to that. But 13.41 specifically identifies the post board as a licensing agency.
But you can be covered by more than one provision of the Data Practices Act, right?
You would apply the more specific provision. So, for instance, the post board has specific provisions applicable to it under 13.41 subdivision 3 and subdivision 5. If you were to read 13.82 as applicable to the post board, that would actually create conflicts with 13.41 subdivisions 3 and 5. So if Your Honor is asking which one would apply to the post board, my argument would be that 13.41 necessarily applies as the more specific provision, both as to its data elements and to the post board's role in its licensing capacity.
And in the response to interrogatories, the post board asserted that once it gets data from a law enforcement agency that an officer is designated as an undercover officer, that the post board treats that as security data. So what does that mean? What does the post board do with it then?
It would attempt to treat the data as security information. However, Your Honor,
Data then is what I'm curious about.
It's licensing data. However, Your Honor, I would note
everything, including the name and date of birth.
On its licensing database, So that database is searchable through an online lookup tool. The Post Board historically, given concerns from CLIOs, would take that information off of its online license data lookup tool.
So I know the responses were sometimes Excel spreadsheets, or right? I mean, is that right? That the disclosures by the Post Board that are issue in this lawsuit?
Correct, Your Honor. And that's
so is there some distinction there that the Post Board was, and I know we're out of the, we're probably way outside the record now, but I'm trying to figure out the issues here, given that we've accepted discretionary review of an interlocutory issue.
I mean, just to clarify, on the scope of the Rule 12, respondents have only ever claimed 13.4.3 as their theory of liability. They've had multiple opportunities to amend their complaints, and they have done so multiple times, and they have stuck true only to 13.4.3.
Okay.
On the scopes of the disclosure...
On that point, as I read your briefing, they've stuck with 13.3 sub 5. You've stuck with KSTP. Why, in your view, does KSTP compel a conclusion that this data was public?
It compels the conclusion that respondents' claim of liability fails as a matter of law. 13.4.3 subdivision 5 cannot apply because the board does not maintain data on its licensees that would actually fit the definition of personnel data. Now, both in the district court and nowhere in respondents' briefing does any...
However, you have 13.4.5 subdivision 5, which says data about undercover officers is private. And you have the Post Board, which says it's public. So you have a conflict between two provisions in the Data Practices Act. How does KSTP apply to that set of facts?
I don't believe that there actually is a conflict between those two provisions of law. 13.4.3 subdivision 5 begins with all personnel data maintained by a government entity. So it's limited to personnel data. That's the defined term under subdivision 1. And that's where KSTP-TV comes into play.
And so you're saying that the information or the data showing that certain officers were working undercover, which was held by the local police offices, is not personnel data?
An employing law enforcement agency would maintain those data for personnel-related purposes. And I would point out, they're the ones who are making the daily assignments. They're the ones who have...
So it is personnel data?
Data that would identify a specific individual as undercover in the hands of an employing law enforcement agency would be personnel data.
Okay.
The question that would go unanswered is, why would the Post Board maintain that data for any personnel-related purpose? Neither respondents below, nor on appeal, nor the district court have proffered any potential reason through which a licensing agency such as the Post Board could maintain the data for any personnel-related purpose. They are not controlling an officer's assignments. They are not paying the officers. They're not maintaining data about benefits paid to the officers.
You're saying because they're not employees of the Post Board.
They are not employees of the Post Board, and the Post Board is not going to make personnel-related uses of any of that data. So, like, an example would be MMB, Minnesota Management and Budget. They would actually maintain personnel data on people that they don't employ directly. I, as an officer, you know, MMB maintains, I, as an attorney of the Attorney General's Office, MMB would maintain personnel data on me about, you know, amounts that I'm paid. They do that
so
for various state employees.
So for non-state employees, you're referring to, like, retirement plan data or that sort of stuff by MMB? If they're state employees, something like that.
Yeah, so state employees' data that's maintained by MMB, that would be an example where they're not employed by MMB, but MMB maintains it for a personnel-related purpose.
So to make sure I understand, in the hands of the local government employer, the designation as undercover is personnel data, which is private. That data gets transferred to the Post Board, and the Post Board maintains it not for personnel reasons, but for licensing reasons. Does the Data Practices Act address what happens when data are transferred from one agency to another, when those agencies would treat or classify the data differently?
There is a traveling data provision, but before I answer that specific question, I want to emphasize again that the allegation is not that the Post Board disclosed any information identifying any officers undercover. So they didn't disclose the undercover designation. What is alleged to have been disclosed are names and birth dates, identifying information. The traveling data provision applies if a classification at the sending entity is going to be given over to the receiving entity, but only if there is not a more specific provision of law that applies to the data in the receiving entity's hands. So even if this were a case in which the Post Board were alleged to have disclosed data transferred from the employer over to the Post Board, my argument would be that the Post Board's specific classifications under 13.41 still control.
I thought I read a statute that said when that transfer occurs, the classification of the data that existed in the hands of the transferor continues to apply when it's received by the transferee.
I believe Your Honor is referring to 13.03. I know that I'm out of time. If I can continue to answer the question.
We are going to go until we get the answers we need to decide this interlocutory appeal.
All right. So I believe there's a more specific provision under the traveling data classification that says if the receiving entity has a more specific classification applicable to the data, that data controls. And you would see this, for instance, if a public employee were going to be investigated by another government agency for some sort of criminal wrongdoing. So let's assume that a 13.82 law enforcement agency is going to conduct an investigation of a state employee. You wouldn't want the traveling data provision to say that personnel data applies when it is actually classified as confidential or private criminal investigative data under 13.82. And that would be, so, and again, the traveling data classification piece is not at issue here. It's not something that automatically transforms data in another government entity's possession.
So you're saying the names and date of births that were disclosed were not received from the employer. That was information that was directly given to Post.
That would have been information received before any application made by the law enforcement agency and the applicant for a license. It would have been received by the Post Board as part of its examination processes.
So someone who was sitting for the exam provided that information and they later became licensed?
Yes. So they could apply for, you know, their first time license, they've not been licensed in another jurisdiction, they're going to sit for an examination and they tell the Post Board their name in order to sit for the examination. Likewise for out-of-state officers, if they're coming in for a license in Minnesota for the first time, they have to sit for an examination as well. They provide their identifying information before any application is made. They provide their identification before they become a licensee.
But the, Judge Larkin, is it okay if
of
I
course,
ask a couple
please,
more questions?
Please.
So, but the undercover status, that information is provided by the CLIO, as I think it's termed.
Yes.
Okay. And then is that the set of data that includes the names, date of birth, undercover status, is that data security information for purposes of 13.37?
Is which information, Your Honor? The entire set of data on an individual?
Yeah, who's an undercover agent.
So what they would do is they would try to treat the information as security information on their online license lookup tool. I would point out that 13.37 itself is actually discretionary. The Court of Appeals has issued precedential opinions, I believe, saying that it needs to be discretion exercised on a case-by-case basis, not blanket designations. And again,
so if Post had exercised its discretion, which, you know, whether that's in the complaint or not, let's just assume it had, would it the names and date of birth of undercover agents be private or not public data by virtue of 13.37, assuming Post had exercised its discretion?
Which section?
Isn't it 13.37, the security information provision?
So it's a somewhat confusing premise because it would assume that the Post Board would have had to exercise the discretion to render the data not public and then release it. regardless of having elected to withhold it.
It seems that the interrogatory responses indicate that the Post Board did exercise its discretion in that manner.
Well, and Your Honor, again, we're limited to the claims.
I understand. That's why I'm asking the hypothetical.
Hypothetically, if they had exercised the discretion in response to a specific request and then said, we're going to treat all this data as private right now in response to this request, and that was what I was attempting to say earlier, is that the Court of Appeals has said you need to exercise discretion on a case-by-case basis under 1337, assuming that that had happened, and we were talking about disclosure notwithstanding a request-specific discretionary classification as security information, we'd be talking about a different case. But on the Rule 12 basis, respondents have claimed that the data are 1343, and for all the reasons I've already stated, 1343 is inapplicable because the Post Board maintains licensing data, not personnel data. It doesn't maintain data for any personnel-related purpose. It maintains data for licensing purposes. And I realize that I'm far over time, but if I can just quickly say, the Post Board's statutory charge is to ensure that only qualified individuals attain licenses, to ensure that current licensees are up to their current educational and training standards, to ensure that unsafe or unfit licensees have action taken against their licenses, and to maintain those records for licensing-related purposes. If Your Honors have no other questions.
I have a question.
Okay.
Just could you very briefly tell me why the district court erred in allowing this suit to go forward?
It misapplied binding Supreme Court precedent.
That precedent being?
KSTP-TV's single-purpose reading. Instead, the district court adopted a but-for analysis.
Okay. As to the single-purpose reading, as I understand KSTP, that was a case where one employer, Transit, had data and admitted that it held the data for two reasons. It held it for personnel reasons, and it held it for, you know, safety investigative purposes. So what the Supreme Court was looking at there and the basis for its single-purpose rule was, what do we do when an employer has data and it's holding the data both for personnel uses and for some other uses? Does the some other use kind of eliminate the personnel nature of the data? That doesn't seem to be what we have here. What we have here is data held by the CLIOs that's private. Some of it was transferred to the Post Board, or the Post Board may have already had it, the names and dates and birth, and it's public. How do we resolve those two conflicting classifications?
Again,
so my question is KSTP procedurally and factually distinguishable such that it doesn't control the outcome in this case?
Again, respondents' claims are not that the Post Board has disclosed the undercover designation that was provided by any CLIO. That is why we're not concerned about a traveling data classification. What respondents have asserted, what they have alleged in all of their amended complaints, is that the board released the identifying information comprising names and dates of birth on these officers.
And I assume their argument would be, and as that information is held by the CLIO, it's clearly protected, it's private. As it's held by the Post Board, it's not. What do we do about that conflict?
About a potential conflict in the statute?
Yes.
My answer to that would be, it is up to the legislature to resolve any potential anomalous outcomes or potential conflicts in the statutes. Now, I would, just on the policy side of this, I would point out that the legislature knew how to provide a specific classification for undercover data. It did so only in the personnel context, and despite 13.41 having several provisions applicable to the Post Board itself, it elected not to provide a specific classification for undercover data. It could have adopted very similar language to 1343 and employed that in 13.41. Now, as to the logic of why it doesn't appear in 13.41, it would be speculating, but I would argue that 13.43 data is actually much more sensitive than what the Post Board's licensing data is. So the 13.43 employer, they're going to be the ones who actually maintain data about an undercover officer's specific activities. They're the ones making job assignments on daily work. They're the ones who are paying the officer, giving them expense reimbursements for where they're parking, things like that.
And they the also post board merely has the data it collected when there was an application, so name, date of birth, and later receives, and as I understand it, only recently started receiving information about undercover status.
As yes, and you can see in the interrogatory record essentially that when the post board was working up its public database, there were concerns that, you know, what do we do with undercover officers? And that's where the post board was placed in this difficult position of having, there's a 1343 classification applicable to employers. Where's the classification for the post board?
Okay. Does KSTP answer this question, given the procedural and factual differences? And if it doesn't, why are we here on discretionary review? As I understand it, you sought and obtained discretionary review based on the argument that this is governed by KSTP, and we need to get a ruling under KSTP because if we don't, there's going to be all kinds of confusion.
My argument is that KSTP does apply.
Even though KSTP was not dealing with a situation where you had data in the hands of two different agencies resulting in two different classifications that could be conflicting.
The data elements that are at issue here are names and dates of birth. My argument under KSTP is that there needs to be a single personnel-related purpose for which the post board, we're not talking about the CLIOs or their agencies, a single personnel-related purpose for which the post board can make use of that data.
So you're asking us to extend the single purpose rule of KSTP to a situation where data is held by someone other than the person who holds it for a personnel reason?
I am asking the court to apply KSTP to data, its licensing data, maintained by a licensing agency for a licensing-related purpose, and to recognize that similar types of data held by different government entities for different purposes can be subject to different classifications.
Have you looked at the case law on that point?
On
what you just stated, that data can be held by different agencies and subject to different classifications under the Data Practices Act, depending on which agency holds the data.
I am generally familiar with the case law, Your Honor. I don't have a...
Are you familiar with Harlow?
Harlow is the anomalous use case. Is that the case that stands for the proposition that the MGDPA does not prevent anomalous results?
Yes.
Yes, and I believe that the Supreme Court acknowledged that data would be subject to potentially different classifications. Harlow is a little bit complicated because I think it was within a single government entity, and I'm just trying to recollect in the moment. But I would just point out that the DPA scheme itself has different classifications applicable to different types of entities. So an educational institution, for instance, might maintain data on students for one purpose. If that information is maintained by a law enforcement agency for a law enforcement-related purpose, now we have potentially different classifications.
And what does Harlow say happens in that case?
In which case, Your Honor?
Between where you have, it's my understanding that in Harlow, we had data held by one agency that did an investigation, and as a result of the investigation, the results were made public. The same underlying data was held by another agency, and that was a welfare agency, and that data was designated private. And what the Supreme Court looked at is what do we do when we have the same data held by two different agencies, one designates it public, the other designates it private. What happens then?
Well, it would be whatever classification applies to the entity that receives a request to release data. So if a government entity who maintains the data as public, properly classified as public, releases the data, no liability. Or if they refused to release public data, liability under 1308. Okay. So it would be an entity-specific determination. But again, respondents' argument is that 1343 is the liability theory for all of their claims. 1343 does not and cannot apply to the post board as a licensing agency for the specific data elements complained of.
Any other questions before we move on?
I've got a quick question about class definition, but it could also be in address and rebuttal?
All right, let's do that.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Your Honors.
May it please the court, my name is Chris Metal on behalf of the MPPOA. With me is Cassie Merrick. I'm going to kind of throw my oral argument outline out the window because and just try to answer your questions. So first, with respect to 13.03, that's this traveling data provision, that's subdivision C, that to the extent that the government data are disseminated to a government entity by another government entity, the data disseminated shall have the same classification at the entity receiving them as they had at the entity providing them. So now we're going back to the CLIOs, which is the chief law enforcement officer that, you know, with the district.
Wait, so I have a question
yes.
for you. So I read 13.03C, and it's helpful, I think.
Yep.
On the other hand, what it literally means, if it's applied, is that St. Paul Police Department knows who their undercover officers are.
Yes.
So it's designated as private data in the hands of the St. Paul Police. The Post Board, I mean, let's assume that these officers were not designated to the Post Board by the CLIO, the St. Paul CLIO, as undercover. If you read 13.03C literally, then the name and date of birth, what's provided in the license application or the exam application, would have to be treated as private data because it's identifying, you know, it identifies who the individual is, and all of that is private if 13.43 applies to the Post Board. So how can your where in the statute in the many, many pages of the Government Data Practices Act does it say that it's only private data if the agency knows about it, knows that it's private?
So
are you following? It may be a confusing question, but if you're following my thought.
I was just going to re-ask it just so I make sure
I
understand.
Yeah, yeah, please go ahead.
When I get into hypotheticals, and sorry, I can be a little obtuse, so I need to use names.
Yeah,
so let's say Jane Doe is a St. Paul police officer. This CLIO for the St. Paul Police Department does not identify Jane Doe as a police as an undercover officer.
Even this is before 2022, where they started doing it. Yeah.
And her name and date of birth goes up to the Post Board with respect to that. Is that private data?
The hands of the Post Board when they don't even know that the person is? Because if you read this literally, it's private data. If you're saying 13.43 applies to any government, I mean, literally, what the district court's opinion said was that any government entity in the whole state of Minnesota has to treat that as private, literally, whether they know it or not.
A name
so
and
where, so where do we get to you have to know it, or you're arguing it doesn't matter if the agency knows it?
What I'm arguing, Judge Siegel, is that you don't need, frankly, even to get there because of 1382, is that in 1382, I'm going to acknowledge that it doesn't, the same words, law enforcement agency, doesn't go all the way through that section. But if you look at subdivision one, it says that the section shall apply to agencies which carry on a law enforcement function, including but not limited to, and then the Post Board is in there. And then if you go down to that section 17, that's when it says a law enforcement agency or a law enforcement dispatching agency working under the direction of law enforcement agency. I don't know how you can divorce section 1 from 17 when it says agencies that carry on that law enforcement function includes the Post Board.
But isn't law enforcement agency defined in Minnesota Statute 626?
It is, but then
and
when
then
you
it
go
doesn't
back,
seem yeah like it applies. That definition would apply here to 1382.
And I would respectfully disagree if you look at subdivision one, where it says agencies which carry on a law enforcement function, boom, and all the way down.
Well, the Post Board's clearly, yeah, included in subdivision one.
But even if you get, I'm sorry.
No, no, go, finish.
No. I was going to go someplace else.
We're trying
else.
To
so,
cover a lot
yeah,
in
no,
a short time.
I was going to go to another place, and I don't want to take you to a
no,
a different...
and I don't want to belabor anything in particular for too long a period of time. But back to this question. So if the post board doesn't know they're working as undercover...
And they do.
No, but let's say they don't know that.
Yep.
Because literally, I think the way you read the district court's opinion, it doesn't matter. If 13.43 applies, 13.43 applies. And the same with 1382. So where do we get that they have to know? Is that in the act? Is that common sense? How that the agency has to know that they're working undercover?
Well, number one, they do. There's a box that the CLIO fills out that is disseminated to the post board. And on top of that, and this is the fact.
Right, but I'm dealing with interpreting a statute that might imply in lots of different situations.
Yep, no, understood.
Yeah.
But if you're asking if, with respect to that Jane Doe, where do I show more or less that the post board does know that Jane Doe is undercover? Number one, they do.
Would they be disclosing private data if they did not know?
I don't think that they would in that circumstance.
Somehow or another, they have to have that knowledge.
I think that the CLIO has to identify them, and that's how they get into the class definition, and then that kind of goes to the failsafe that they didn't make below. But that would be a person, I don't think that would be included in the class, because Jane Doe, if CLIO didn't say that this is an undercover person, I don't see how we could possibly claim otherwise.
They have to be advised somehow or another.
I think they have to
that,
be.
That was my... Okay.
Yeah, I think they have to be.
All right. Now I'll let you go into other matters.
Okay, got it. So go
can
ahead.
Can I follow up just briefly?
Yes.
So I understand your argument, or at least I think I do, about 13.82. But appellant argues that your theory of liability for all claims is based on 13.43. So can you address that argument, and relatedly does 13.82, is that a more specific provision that prevails over 13.41 if that were the applicable provision?
So we have an amended complaint that we have filed that is down below. So no.
So I understand that, but we're here on discretionary review. Can we consider that amended complaint? Because maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the amended complaint was, at least the third amended complaint was filed after the petition for discretionary review.
One of the beautiful things about Minnesota with respect to state court not following our friends in federal court is with respect to the rejection of Twombly. And so, yes, I believe that you can. This is in the record with respect to when we're talking not only with respect to our complaint, but also with respect to the interrogatory responses with respect to the class certification decision. So are there any facts that could support our claim? The answer, Judge Cochran, yes. And I think that you can.
Did the court grant leave to file the third amended complaint? I just haven't looked in the record.
Sorry, it was stipulated.
What?
It was stipulated.
Oh, stipulated.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
all right, thank you. That's helpful.
Yes. So back on subdivision 5 and with respect to Judge Orkin's questions with respect to KSTP, let's just assume that 8.2 and all these others don't exist, and we're sitting there on this pillar with respect to 1343 sub 5. KSTP involved that Metro Transit matter where they reduced those two videos to those DVDs, one I think involving an accident, one involving an altercation with a rider. Those videos were admittedly below that they said, hey, listen, we use these for safety and training purposes in addition to that, so there were separate purposes. The argument that I'm hearing now is that, well, we don't tell undercover officers what to do. We don't tell them what bus to go out. We don't tell them, I want you to go on a drug bust or a gun thing or something like that. So we're the post board. We're just licensing. So therefore, this is some sort of a separate purpose. How can a cop do that without having a license? it is inextricably intertwined with being a law enforcement officer is licensure. That is not a separate purpose. You have to have the license. So to use that KSTP decision, did the bus driver need to have the videos there in order to drive a bus? And the question is clearly no. So to say that there's two separate purposes here, I just think is just a non-starter.
So two questions. One is, would you answer Judge Larkin's question about how do you distinguish Harlow then? And then second, the disclosure here was 10,460, according to the interrogatory answers, names and of licensed peace officers. How does that disclose somebody's undercover status would be my second question.
So,
sorry for asking two questions once.
And
okay.
Let me hit Harlow first. I'll do them in order. So with respect to Harlow, the way that I read that is that you default with respect to the receiving entity on that, which would be the CLIO, which would be the undercover officer identity. And I think the public policy in this state, God help us, should say yes with respect to undercover officer's identity, that we should default in favor of saying that we're not going to reveal undercover officer's identities. If you knew some of the conversations that Ms. Merrick and I have had with respect to these cops that are calling up, absolutely despondent about what has happened here, which leads me to your second question. How do you figure this out? What the Post Board did here is that they released all of these Excel spreadsheets with all the cops on there, including the undercover cops. Their way of remedying that was to reach out to these media outlets and say, send me that back. Some did, some did not. But the ones that did send back, they then sent them an Excel spreadsheet with all the cops identified in them without the undercover cops. God. If you have those two spreadsheets, you know every undercover cop in Minnesota now. That's what they've done.
You're complaining about their remedy.
This is what they did immediately upon bringing this up with them. This was even before we had filed suit that they had done
right.
When we brought
okay.
this up. So that's
record. Where do we find that in the record?
I don't know that.
It's in the
third amended complaint. But then also
that allegation.
Yes. Also on top of that. And again, I look at, back to Judge Siegel, and I have to kind of ground things more like in actual fact, and I always look things from my home base, and I grew up in Waseca. So I looked at Waseca has public-facing a website that identifies all the deputies and all the officers for the police department and the county sheriff. I know by looking at that, that there are certain people on there that are not included. I know that those people are undercover cops. If I had this entire database and I could see I could look up somebody, pardon me for using your first name, if I could look up for Michelle Larkin, a cop in Waseca, she's not on that public-facing thing, but I have that entire list, I can figure out pretty quickly what's going on here. There is somebody here in Waseca that is not identified as a cop. I can figure out that is probably an undercover officer. And again, with the way that the internet is now with respect to searching capabilities, I'm sure you all have the same. I have one of these programs that tries to take my address off the internet over and over again. And every month I get a report where there's another 5 to 10 that have found my address and that they're trying to take them off the internet. This is what this case is really about. This is really more or less what this case from the MPPOA is to actually put some actual responsibility within the Post Board with respect to this data, because they were just giving all of this out until they complained about it. And there are some people right now, I can tell you, that they've taken extraordinary measures knowing that their names are out there right now and are extremely concerned about their names and their families. I have talked to officers now that are putting firearms in their refrigerators so that they have them more accessible after this was done. This is a sincerely serious situation that needs to be remedied from the Post Board.
You're saying happened, and is this in your third amended complaint,
this
allegation?
I'm looking at Ms. Merrick because she drafted it, yes.
That the post board contacted whoever they'd given the complete list to and said, send it back. And then they responded again with a list without the
correct
undercover officers.
Correct.
So okay. By comparing the list and having knowledge of this lawsuit, a person could put two and two together.
Correct. Okay. And this is also in the interrogatories. It's in the interrogatories as well.
So can I ask
go ahead.
A question about the class certification?
Yes.
That's where I was going. Oh.
In terms of the Hunt elements, I'm sure you're familiar
yes.
with those.
Yes.
Third element, can you help me understand your argument that there isn't that element is satisfied? Because it seems to me you're in the complaint you're seeking not just injunctive relief but damages.
Yeah. Are we talking about typicality? Is what we're talking about?
No, I'm talking about that the participation of an individual member is not required.
So
it seems to me your complaint is seeking damages.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Wouldn't participation of an individual member be necessary to show damages to that?
With respect to, for example, one of the things, the relief that we're going to be seeking is that there's a law enforcement database from a company out in California that scrubs your name from the internet, like much like the one I just said, but frankly, it does a better job. I tried to do it myself, and you can't do that unless you're a law enforcement officer. So there are some damages, Judge Cochran, that are common to the class, but I would again...
But I thought the complaint specifically alleged that plaintiffs, officers 1, 2, and 3, on behalf of themselves and the class, seek to recover damages they have suffered. I thought it was specific to those officers.
No, that's where I was just going to next.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. So the answer is are damages with respect to individual class members going to vary? The answer is yes. I mean, they are. Does that defeat a class certification? You know as well as I do, it doesn't. I grew up in the antitrust world, and with respect to price-fixing cases, if all of us are going to Target, we're all going to have different damages with respect to anything that Target participated in a price-fixing conspiracy. But the impact, the typicality impact, and the commonality is certainly met here.
So you think you can prove your damages claim without the participation of individual members?
I think that we're going to be able to show with respect to liability. If it gets that far, then we might have to go back to individual damages determinations for each person. It is conceivable. But is this the more efficient way of doing it rather than showing liability over and over and over again? I would hasten to guess, and if I were Judge Castro, I would try to kill me if I had to make him go through hundreds of these sorts of cases on liability over and over and over again, which is, again, what Rule 23 is really about, is efficiency. And so I think if we can get to that point, and again, normally these, I will concede most of these cases settle by that point, but even with respect to a Target data breach case, I keep picking on Target, and I apologize, I love Target, but with their data breach cases, those were all class actions. And certainly your information might have been given to a fraudster and mine might not have. Your damages would certainly exceed mine in that sort of case. That's why we have the opt-in and prove your damages point in a class action.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
We have one question about class definition.
Yes.
And the district court was not clear on exactly the class definition. Is it your position that the class definition is the one that you requested, that simply says all peace and police officers in Minnesota whose information was designated to the post board as undercover and was thereafter disclosed by the post board?
Yes, that's what I believe to be the class that was certified.
Okay. The district court judge seemed to include the word private in there and some other things, but it looked like that was just part of the memorandum of law. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I have several items to cover here, and I wanted to sort of work in reverse order. The issue of what happened following the initial disclosure, I'm looking at the last amended complaint. I do not see allegations in the amended complaint regarding actions that the Post Board took after the disclosure in terms of follow-up with requesters. If opposing counsel is able to point to that allegation in their amended complaint, I will stand corrected. I don't believe that is in the amended complaint. Regardless,
do you agree that we can consider the last amended complaint?
Your Honor, you could consider the last amended complaint, although I point out that ultimately their theory of liability remains with 13.43, even regardless of their reference to 13.82 in the amended complaint. And that's because 13.82, the subdivision 17 that they are arguing about, simply loops back to 13.43. It says, when access to the data would reveal the identity of an undercover law enforcement officer as provided in section 13.43, subdivision 5. They're essentially clawing back in 13.43. 13.43 fails for the reasons that I addressed previously.
Under KSTP.
Under KSTP and the single purpose reading, but also the more specific classifications applicable under 13.41.
Does okay, your interpretation lead to an absurd result where the names and date of birth of undercover agents can be revealed in a way that allows their identity to be discovered, even if it's just the name and date of birth?
When you say their identity, Your Honor, can you clarify? Because
their name and, well, I understand that the allegation is that the name and date of birth have been disclosed, not the undercover status. But your friend on the other side argues that with that information, members of the public can discover who is an undercover agent. So is your reading of the Data Practices Act that, I mean, I think everyone can agree that it's important for the identity of undercover agents to remain private or not discoverable. Is your reading of the Data Practices Act that allows disclosure of names and date of birth of undercover agents, is that public data, is that an absurd result?
I don't think it would be an absurd result if you consider the context of both 13.43 and 13.41. Again, the law enforcement agencies that are actually employing and directing the duties of undercover officers are going to have a wildly different amount of data on those undercover officers.
But the argument is that just with the name and date of birth, people can discover who they are.
The fact that they're a licensee, Your Honor?
Yes.
And
undercover.
Well, I mean, I want to restrain myself to the record.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. I'm limiting it to the name and date of birth, but they're alleging that just with that information alone, people can discern who are undercover agents by looking up people, you know, by using other sources of information that they have combination with that information is my understanding.
And the Data Practices Act doesn't really account for potential uses of data by third parties through inference or through additional data elements, whatever construction they want to attempt. I would point out that court records would be a perfect example of this. Court records are generally presumed to be public. I imagine that some subset of undercover officers go into court and give public testimony. They have appeared previously in court cases without their undercover status applying. Anybody could go make use of public court records and say, okay, I can't find this officer, so I know they're undercover. It's not really contemplated by the MGDPA what third parties are able to do through inference to determine potentially not public data elements.
But here the allegation is that the Post Board made two disclosures. First disclosure, all the officers in the state. Second disclosure, certain names removed from the initial list. So here what we're talking about is a comparison of two disclosures made by the Post Board, not somebody going down with one disclosure from the Post Board and looking at public court records.
Again, I believe the allegation is not anything about a second disclosure. And I will stand to be corrected by opposing counsel, but I think it was wrong to say that the current amended complaint alleges that fact. I would also point out that with opposing counsel's insistence, the board stipulated to the entry of a temporary injunction order. That temporary injunction order required by Judge Castro's order the Post Board to go out and to make attempts to claw back this information. Now, the Post Board continued to maintain its obligation under the Government Data Practices Act to receive and respond to requests for government data. So really what opposing counsel is arguing for here is Well, Post Board, you should have ignored your obligations under the Government Data Practices Act to respond to requests subsequently. I understand what the appeal of the argument is, but really what they wanted the Post Board to do was to ignore obligations to respond to data requests. That's not allowable under the law. The Post Board does its best to comply with the provisions of the MGDPA applicable to it, to apply with the court order, and to respond to the allegations. And that's why here on appeal, I think KSTP is clearly applicable to licensing data maintained by the licensing agency for licensing purposes.
For that, were the new responses without the undercover officer names, was that released after the temporary injunction was in place?
My recollection is yes, Your Honor, but I would need to go back and consult my records.
None of this is in the record that we've got in front of it.
Yeah.
All right.
And so I would request that the case be reversed and remanded with instructions to dismiss with prejudice.
Can you respond to the argument that licensing is not a separate purpose from the personnel purpose?
They are different purposes. Personnel-related purposes typically regard what the person is doing in their job functions, the direction of their duties. If you look to 13.43, you see various data elements that do regard personnel-related purposes. So things like their public compensation, things like their benefit data, things like their work location. But the board is created by statute with a statutory charge. That charge is licensing-related. And if we were to accept opposing counsel's argument, the court would be in this place of needing to accept inherent conflict between 13.43 and 13.41, not just for peace officer licensees, but other types of licensees, teachers being a perfect example.
Public teachers need. Can I ask a question that's off track? Do you need a separate license to be an undercover officer?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
So why does the Post Board need to know at all who's working undercover?
It doesn't need to know, Your Honor.
Then why is it collecting that information?
CLIOs were concerned, Your Honor.
What do you mean when you say they were concerned?
They understood that the Post Board had public licensing data. The CLIOs were concerned about the potential mismatch between 13.43 and 13.41, I assume, and this is in the interrogatory responses, but you know, the Post Board's staff was contacted by concerned CLIOs and attempted to create something to fill the gap.
Did the legislature say, CLIOs, you need to notify the Post Board of officers who are working in an undercover capacity?
No, Your Honor. Again, to the best of my knowledge. But the Data Practices Act is obviously this expansive, arcane law. There are sometimes going to be anomalous results. The Supreme Court has acknowledged that possibility. The only thing that a government entity can do is comply with its obligations to provide data in response to requests, to make appropriate classifications for that data, and to withhold where allowed by law. Now, respondents' entire amended complaint sits on the back of 13.43 in a definition inapplicable to the Post Board. For that reason, their claims fail as a matter of law, and they must be dismissed under KSTP. I would ask that the court reverse and remand with those instructions. And if Your Honors have no other questions, thank you.
Seeing none, thank you for your briefing and your arguments and your willingness to answer our questions today. You'll have